welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lion athletics. Happy holidays to all of you out there. Hope that you're having a nice and relaxing time spent with friends and loved ones. But we've got a football game to talk about here. Andrew and Vince joining you here. Thanks again for joining us. But yeah, for the final time in 2023, we have a football preview podcast to go over here as your Penn State Nittany Lions are getting set to take on the Rebels of Ole Miss on December 30th in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So big game, New Year's Six bowl game. There's a lot on the line here for Penn State. It's the first time they've been invited to this game. And Penn State has the chance to become the only team in college football to win all six New Year's Six bowl games. So there's a lot on the line here, even though this isn't a national championship game or anything like that for Penn State. But there's a lot of excitement here for the players, a lot of excitement for the fans. And I know we're pumped to talk about this. But Vince, happy holidays to you, my man. It's good to see you.
Happy holidays. Good to see you, man. How was your Christmas?
It was good. We did a little bit of traveling. We were able to split it up this year, try and be a little smarter about it. So we weren't driving, you know, a combined like 10 to 12 hours in the car over the course of 3 to 4 days, which I got to say, really enjoyed that part of it. Not having to, you know, make these marathon trips, but, you know, got to spend some time, eat some good food, have some good drinks and all that stuff. So it was fun. How about you?
It was good. Just went home, visited some family and, you know, did presents, all that good stuff. Watched the Eagles game. That was nice to see them finally get back in the win column.
Finally. After a
slow month. So good to see that. And yeah, really excited to talk about football one last time before 2024. It's kind of crazy that the new year is almost, you know, coming around the corner. But this will be our last preview pod of 2023, followed by probably what will be a post-game pod, you know, after the Peach Bowl. And fittingly enough, we have one last noon game on December 30th. So we're looking forward to breaking down, getting into the X's and O's and breaking down this Ole Miss running Rebel squad.
Love it. Yeah. So a couple of pieces of news that to kind of help like set the stage here for this conversation, a couple of things that happened very recently, actually. So on the Ole Miss side of things, it was announced today that veteran pass rusher Cedric Johnson has opted out of the Peach Bowl for Ole Miss. He's actually one of, if not the only opt out for the team so far up to this point. You know, it's kind of been a point of emphasis that not many players have announced their intention to opt out of the Peach Bowl for Ole Miss. So it was looking like they were going to have a pretty big squad or pretty full squad for this game. But this, I guess, kind of came as like a shock for Lane Kiffin, the coaching staff, and all the rest of the team. Johnson was one of their sack leaders. And so he almost kind of appears as like an equal trade-off for Chop Robinson in a way for Penn State and Ole Miss, you know, considering the fact that Chop has already decided to not play in this game. So having Johnson, who is tied for the most number of sacks on the team, if I remember the stats correctly. So this is kind of a big deal for them. So, you know, something to keep your eye on if you're a Penn State fan. Obviously, Ole Miss is going to have their next man up mentality and stuff like that. But on the Penn State side of things, one thing that we were waiting to see is Kalen King. Was he going to play in this game, considering his potential draft stock as a potential first round draft pick in this upcoming NFL draft? And so far, it appears like he is preparing to play. He traveled with the team, spotted at practice, going through his usual drills and stuff like that. On the other side of things, or not on the other side of things, but at a different position group, it appears that Olu Fashanu is not going to be playing, but he is with the team, just based on what I was able to gather from his announcement and stuff like that. So, Vince, did you hear anything different? Is Olu planning to play, or is that kind of what you got as well?
I did not hear any updates on whether he's playing or not, outside of he's going to be with the team. The vibe I got that he was playing, but I do understand for a player in his situation why he would not play, just because he's one of those guys who really only has something to lose, right? Like Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, if they have a big Peach Bowl, they can really make a big improvement to their draft stock. And Theo Johnson, you know, Tyler Warren, if he decided to declare, that would help his draft stock. So a lot of different guys who they can improve their stock, but he's one of the guys where, you know, he's going to get taken top five. And the only thing that's going to derail that would be something like an injury. So,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it only takes one freak pile up for his leg to bend the wrong way, and all of a sudden he's not playing football in 2024. So completely understandable either way. On the note of Tyler Warren, as you mentioned, was actually announced, or rather Tyler announced it himself, that he is planning to come back to the team for the 2024 season. So that's a big, big get for Penn State, just in terms of their returning talent, kind of a safety blanket for Drew Aller. Tyler just proved himself to be one of the sure-handed pass catchers of Penn State this season. Real threat in the red zone as well. So it's going to be awesome having him back. And I would honestly kind of go as far as to say that they're going to have another three-headed monster in Warren, Dinkins, and potentially Cross next year. You could even maybe throw Luke Reynolds in there, depending on his development. But they're going to have another solid group at wide or at a tight end.
Yeah, we're slowly becoming tight end U. I love it. Iowa fans might disagree, but really good to see Penn State. That's a big get for Coach Franklin and Kotelnicki for next year. Kotelnicki likes to utilize a lot of tight ends in the offense. So, you know, that is a really big get for Penn State.
No doubt. So, all right. So now that we've kind of set the stage with a couple of opt-outs, a couple of announcements, give me your thoughts on this game. So initial thoughts, what do you know, or what are you looking out for with this Ole Miss squad?
This is a really solid Ole Miss squad in terms of offense. This is definitely one of the better offenses in the country. Definitely one of the best passing attacks with a dart at quarterback. And like, he's got a perfect name for a quarterback. He throws darts, like nothing about it. He's a guy who's when he is on, he's going to, you know, pass for 400 yards. They're also pretty good at running back. So I think that their passing game could, you know, make Penn State have a lighter box, and that could open up things for the running game. So this is a really scary offense. Defensively, they do have a solid defense, but they're not quite as scary. You did see them, you know, have a 55-49 win over LSU in a close shootout. So definitely a scary team, just because, you know, we have seen Penn State go against caliber defenses to Ole Miss, but they haven't put up points. And we know that this Ole Miss offense is very dynamic and explosive, and they're going to put up points. That's the bottom line. And, you know, Drew and company, they got to do the job on offense, and so Penn State doesn't fall behind and become a one-dimensional offense.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When I looked at this team, I saw offensive potential, because this isn't a team that is like some of the others that we've spoken about this past season, where we've been able to look at their squad and say, okay, if you sell out to stop the run, make them one-dimensional, make their quarterback beat you with his arm, then you have a chance to really turn the tide of the game, get a couple turnovers, et cetera, et cetera. But for Ole Miss, that really isn't the case, because you can sell out to stop the run, but then Dart, along with his trio of very dangerous receivers and Harris, Wade, and Watkins, can just torch you all over the place. And there's only so many times you can expect your corners and your nickel to go out there one-on-one and beat these guys when all three of them are so capable. So, you know, when I looked at this game and thought about, you know, what can Penn State, or what should Penn State do defensively, really to me just kind of boiled down to just showing up and playing your game, because we know that Penn State is good pretty much everywhere on the defensive side of the football. There's been some times where the corners have been beaten one-on-one, which does worry me a little bit, but I'm, you know, still confident in the squad overall. I just think it's going to be so important for them to limit the explosive plays on the Ole Miss side, because I think that's really where they're going to start to just kind of win the mental battle against Penn State, because Penn State has struggled to get those explosive plays going for their offense. They got a little bit of it in the game against Michigan State, but hasn't been a consistent thing for Penn State. So I think just controlling the ball, controlling the time of possession and the field and all that stuff, keeping everything in front of them, I think is going to be crucial just to, you know, kind of make sure that they're not trying to play catch up and things like that, like you said. Offensively, when I was thinking about this, you know, I just think they got to continue to do a lot of what they did against Michigan State. You know, I think they got to get Drew into a rhythm early, get the ball out quickly, especially getting it outside to their skill players, particularly the running backs and the tight ends. You know, let them do kind of the hard work, like let them make their plays because they're skilled enough, they're talented enough. They're going to make some guys miss. And personally, I think that Nick and Catron have the potential to really be the difference in this game, both as runners and as pass catchers. You know, one thing that's kind of an interesting stat here. Ole Miss is 71st in rushing yards given up per game defensively in FBS with approximately 152 yards per game. So if Penn State can start getting a push, you know, really start to establish that run game early, we know what that has the potential to do for Penn State offensively and opening things up in the play action and just making life just overall easier for Drew. So obviously, if they're able to do that, that'll mean good things in most scenarios. And finally, as always, you know, Penn State has to protect the football. They've been great at it all year long, so they got to continue to do it here.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points. I really would like to see Penn State almost kind of grind out this win and really win that time of possession battle. I like to see the offensive line be a little nasty and really getting physical with Ole Miss. You know, you saw Georgia do that with a lot of success. So that's how you beat Ole Miss. You got to be the more physical team. Another area where I'm looking for them to shine is, you know, potentially turnovers. That's going to be a big part of where this game is won and lost. Penn State is number one in turnover differential in the country, but Ole Miss is right up there too. So we're plus 18 and Ole Miss is number 14 in the country at plus 9. So this is a squad that takes great care of the football. So, you know, they're definitely no slouches. So if the ball is ever put in harm's way, the defense really needs to capitalize because there will not be many opportunities there. This is a very disciplined Ole Miss team. You know, they played pretty competitively with Alabama. Really, Georgia was the only team that, you know, blew them out this year. They had a nice win over LSU. So this is a squad that is really battle tested and they've had more big games than Penn State. They played Tulane earlier in the season. It's not a really good squad. So this team is definitely a little battle tested. And, you know, I'm looking at the offense to really step up in terms of yard per game. Ole Miss is 59th in the country. So the talent that we do have on that offense, they got to put it together and they got to execute. And I really do hope that Ty Howell and Juwan Sider are able to put together a really good game plan. And, you know, I really hope that they've had a really good month of practice. They've had more time to fill their new roles and get comfortable in those roles. So I think that's only going to benefit the offense with the extra weeks of practice. Something that we haven't really talked about is Ole Miss can also get you in the running game. So not only do they have those three really good wide receivers, but they also got Judkins and Bentley at running back. Both are very high volume carry guys, especially Judkins, and you know, really talented, and they can run the ball too. So this is not a team where, hey, you can just drop seven, because if you do that and have a light box, this team can run the ball. So Penn State is going to have to be good at all levels. They're going to have to try to mix it up depending on what they think Ole Miss is trying to do on, you know, each individual play. And I think that could keep the Penn State defense a little off balance. And, you know, especially with Manny Diaz not calling the plays, that's going to present another challenge for Penn State.
Yeah, no doubt. And one quick interesting tidbit about Judkins as well. He was in the same class out of high school as Singleton and Allen. So I'm willing to bet there's a level of familiarity between the three of them because they probably all did a bunch of like the same camps and stuff like that. So they're probably friends on a certain level. So just something interesting there. But yeah, so I think we're aligned on a lot of these things. I'm like strangely optimistic about the offense, just kind of capitalizing on what they were able to do against Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State defensively, not a great, great test, you know, or benchmark as far as like immense offensive improvements and stuff like that relative to other times we saw the offense just absolutely sputter during this past season. But I think that, you know, for Penn State to have success, they just got to keep things simple, you know, just making sure that Drew's getting the ball out of his hands quickly, that guys are getting separation. And if that's not working, maybe run the ball a little bit more, maybe look to throw the ball to the outside on like a quick screen and stuff like that. Like, it doesn't have to get fancy. It doesn't have to get that complicated. Like, just, you know, as Kotelnicki would say, like, go back to the vanilla ice cream. Do the simple things really well, and that'll just lead to more good things. And you know, if you start to feel things loosen up a little bit, Drew's got the arm to throw it 40, 50 yards down the field, and who knows what'll happen at that point. So yeah, I'm excited though. This is gonna be a fun game, I think. So you mentioned Dart, mentioned Judkins. Any other names on that squad that you're looking at, or is it just kind of more the whole team for you?
Yeah, they just got a lot of different guys who can catch the ball. They do utilize the tight ends as well, so that's an additional challenge. Even looking towards special teams, they're not a team who's afraid to throw the ball and do a fake punt on special teams, especially in a bowl game where, hey, you got nothing to lose. You know, for them, that's another tool they have in their tool belt. So that's another thing I'm looking at. And just, this is an overall really good squad. Like, this is going to be a really tough challenge for Penn State.
Yeah, you don't win 10 games in the SEC without being a good team. Like, that's just the bottom line.
Very true. And if you're looking at, you know, college football playoffs for next year, you know, two squads that are very capable of making it.
Yeah. I mean, especially with the kind of talent that Ole Miss is bringing in through the transfer portal right now. They got a couple of really high profile guys out of the transfer portal recently. So they're gearing up. They're going to make a run at the SEC. They just got to get over that hump of Alabama. You know, that just seems to be the, you know, the hill that Lane Kiffin just can't get over so far. So we'll see if next year is the year, but it'll be tough, you know, especially with Alabama coming off a college football playoff appearance. Jalen Milroe is probably going to be a Heisman Trophy contender and stuff like that. So it'll be tough, but we will see. But yeah, some other names that I had on my list to watch from Ole Miss, all the pass catchers that we talked about. I also have on here Dijon Anthony, ball hawking safety. He's one of the leaders on the team in terms of interception. So as far as taking care of the football, got to always be aware of that guy. And then also on my list is Ashanti Sistrunk, the hard-hitting linebacker, one of the tackle leaders on the team, one of the emotional and strategic leaders on the defense. So he's a guy who's going to be out there calling the plays, like pointing things out. He's an experienced guy, and you know, he's well-known and well-respected around the SEC for good reasons. So a couple of names for Penn State fans to keep an eye on out here.
Yeah, I would say Ole Miss, the strength of their defense is in the middle. Like, they got a lot of really good safeties, a lot of good linebackers that can come up and tackle. So I do think that, you know, if Penn State is going to, you know, do well offensively, they do need to do some work along the perimeter, and they got to use that speed they have. I would really like to see them utilize the speed of Nick Singleton and maybe Caden Saunders, Keandre Lambert, maybe getting some horizontal movement going and working vertically, kind of like the Miami Dolphins do with like Mostert and Hill, or, you know, the 49ers with Debo, and they do some of that vertical or side to side running. Exactly. You don't want to do that every play, but you got to get those guys in space and get them to rock.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's the point. It's like, you can't have Nick Singleton line up next to the quarterback every single play, hand the ball off to him, and then he has to like run into the line, which may or may not be getting a push, and then expect him to be his most effective self. You got to get him moving, got to get him the ball when he's, you know, out in space, either behind a screen or out of the flat or something like that. Like, that's really where he's going to do his most damage, because if he can make one guy miss, he's always a home run threat. So, and I think that just goes back to what we saw against Michigan State. I mean, Nick Singleton really got going in that game, both as a runner and a pass catcher. So I'm hoping that we see more of the same. Like, they don't need to overcomplicate it, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like you said earlier, keep the vanilla and be good at it.
Yeah. Cool. You want to do some over-unders?
Yeah, let's do it. Heading into this game, the over-under is at 48.5. Total points, you got over or under?
So 48.5. Let's see here. I have the over.
The over. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Penn State. So let's see, we got the spread here. So that would be about 22.5 and 26.5. So do you think that Penn State gets over 26.5 points?
Yes, they do. Yep. That's my prediction. Over.
Over. I like it. I'm not quite as optimistic, so I will take the under. All right. Ole Miss over under 22.5 points.
I also have the over here as well.
I think I will go with the over. Dart and that offense, really impressive. So I think they'll get the over there. All right. Moving down to, let's see. Let's go with passing yards. Over under 277 passing yards for Ole Miss.
Cool. Oh man. I'm gonna take the under. This is a good pass defense for Penn State. And you can argue that this is probably the second best defense that Ole Miss is going to play all season behind Georgia. And in that game, Georgia held Dart to 112 yards passing in Athens. So as I'm seeing probably around 200 to 220 yards passing for Ole Miss in this game, so I'll take the under.
You know what? I'll take the under as well. I do think that you'll see Dart making some good plays. Good offense typically beats good defense, so I think he'll make his throws, and you know, it's definitely going to be a really challenging day for the Penn State defense. So
no doubt. I mean, they're going to get some chunk plays for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right, moving over to Drew and the offense. So do you anticipate over or under 204 passing yards?
I have the over here. I'm feeling about 220 for Drew. I think that they are probably going to go about 60-40 in favor of the pass in this game, because I think that towards the end, especially in that Michigan State game, they started to treat more of the running backs and the running game as more of an extension of their passing ability. So, you know, throwing the ball out into the flat, getting more of those screens involved, throwing it to the outside and letting the playmakers do their thing. So I think, you know, it's not so much going to be like 2 yards and a cloud of dust and stuff like that. So when it's all said and done, I'm feeling about 220. So I'll say over.
I think I'm going to take the under here. I'm feeling more around that 190. So I'm going to go with the under. Yeah. All right. Running the football, do you have over or under 179 yards for Ole Miss?
Yeah, so I have just under here. Because like I said, I mean, Penn State is so good at defense. Like, they're good at defense. Like, just period. We'll just kind of use that as the foundation here. They're good at passing, defending the pass, and they're also really good at defending the run. Penn State is allowing less than 100 yards rushing per game throughout this entire season. Now, granted, there haven't been as many rushing threats that Penn State has faced in the likes of Quinshon Judkins. I mean, the closest thing to him probably that Penn State has played so far is probably Blake Corum, and we saw what he did to Penn State. So I'm seeing about 100 yards for Judkins in this game. I'm seeing around 150 total for Ole Miss when it's all said and done.
Nice. I'm going to take the under as well. This Penn State defense has shown all year who they are. Really good team, especially stopping the run. So while I do think Judkins and company will get some good chunk plays and some good runs, I just think there's no way they can achieve that season average mark. So I'm going to go with the under. All right. Over or under 187 rushing yards for Penn State.
Yeah. So I'm going to take the under here. You know, Penn State hasn't been able to consistently run the ball all season. That just really hasn't been their strength. They haven't shown that they can do that when they need to. So I think that there's going to be more passing to the running backs again, like we saw against Michigan State. And so what I'm feeling right now is around 150 yards for Penn State, which is pretty much right in line with what Ole Miss has been giving up on the ground per game this season at around 152 yards on average per game. So that's kind of where I think we're going to find Penn State there as well. So looking at, like, you know, maybe like 70 for Nick or for Catron and like another 60 for the other running back. So you could swap either name and I would believe it. And then probably another like 15 to 20 for Drew.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm in agreement as well. I do think it's going to be an under. Just this offense has really struggled for the majority of the year, especially towards the end with, you know, maybe the exception of Michigan State and Maryland. They had a nice performance. This team is a lot better than Maryland, though. So
that is true.
And they're a lot better than Michigan State. So this is going to be a really tough ask for Penn State. All right, over or under 1.5 turnovers for the Rebels.
So they give up the ball more than 1.5 times. I'm going to take the under here. Jackson Dart has been really good at taking care of the football. He's only thrown 5 interceptions in comparison to his 20 touchdowns. So, you know, just when you look at the averages, like, that's not a lot of times that he's put the ball in harm's way. I do think that Penn State is going to win the turnover battle in this game, but I don't think that Penn State's taking the ball away twice.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there. I would not be surprised if you don't see a turnover the entire game. So yeah. I'm going to take under in favor of Ole Miss. Over under 1.5 for Penn State.
Under. I think they go turnover free.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this is going to be like a weird game. Like, that's almost like my I could almost make that my communion prediction, like, unofficially. Yep. That I don't think either team will have a turnover. So I think this is going to be a really lot of punts. Or, you know, field goals or just kind of scores in general. I don't think you're going to see the big swing of emotion of, you know, turnovers and big plays like that in this game.
Yep.
All right. So do you want to go over communion predictions?
Yeah, let's do it. Hit me with yours.
I'll let you go first.
Okay. Yeah, so my communion prediction for this final game of the season is that Nick Singleton will have 2 touchdowns on the ground. The reason why I say that is because he got going in that game against Michigan State. I think that there's, you know, some tangible momentum there that he's going to carry into this game. I think that he's going to find some of that gear that he showed in last season against the likes of Auburn and some other teams, where he explodes and he's a problem for opposing defenses. And I think that they're going to be able to find ways to get him the ball as a runner, but get him moving side to side, making good use of that speed. So I'm feeling 2 touchdowns for Nick Singleton, our 5-star man on the ground in this game.
He's a 5-star man.
He sure All right, is.
For my final communion prediction of the season, I think that Theo Johnson is going to have 2 receiving touchdowns. That's my nice prediction. So, and cool. His last game as a Nittany Lion, he's going to be very happy that he did not opt out. I think he's going to shine in that last game for the blue and the white.
Love it. Do you think the Eagles take a chance on him, make him a backup to Dallas?
Maybe that. I think it would depend where he is on the draft board, because they do have Calcaterra, and I do think Theo's game is very similar to Calcaterra.
True.
So I feel like they kind of have a guy like him, but yeah, you never know.
Sweet. All right, cool. So I went first with communion prediction. You want to hit me with your final score prediction?
All right. So final score prediction of the year. I've kind of gone both ways on this. I felt very good vibes at, you know, at the quarterback club. However, I'm going to be the Grinch on this one. I do have Ole Miss winning this one 24-20. I just feel like it's, you know, almost too good to be true for Penn State to win all 6 New Year's 6 games and to be the only team to do that. I do think it's going to be a very close and competitive game. Some other things that worry me are, you know, opt-outs, with obviously Chop Robinson not playing. Olu's status we're really unsure of. Johnny and Kalen, we don't know their status for sure. So it's just uncertain of, you know, the opt-outs that we have. Ole Miss only has 1 opt-out. I feel like Ole Miss has played a tougher schedule in comparison to Penn State. And, you know, they've done a nice job winning the games they have to win. So I do think just because of the offense's struggles, I do think that's the big thing that's keeping me back. Like, I have a lot of confidence in the defense, but at the end of the day, I just do not think that the offense is going to put up enough points. I want to say that the factor that maybe swing me to us losing is that it's a noon game. Penn State hasn't played well for a single noon game all year. And, you know, they have a large enough sample size that they're not a noon team. So until they prove me wrong, you know, I got to go with Ole Miss on this one. Even though my heart's telling me to go Penn State, I think the final score will be Ole Miss 24, Penn State 20.
Hey, that's fair. And yeah, that's an interesting point about the noon game performances. I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, this was the year that Penn State got bombarded with noon starts, a couple of those being against Ohio State and Michigan. And we saw exactly what happened in those games. So definitely rightful to be wary of those noon starts for sure. But in a way, I'm glad that I'm going last here, because I'm going to bring this around to an optimistic events here. So
maybe you'll make my heart grow like three sizes, and I'll just switch my score prediction.
Yeah, just call me Penn State Cindy Lou Who. So I've got Penn State winning this one 27-24. So I don't think Penn State's going to cover this spread of 3.5 points that they have in favor of them right now. But I believe in this defense. And even though they're not going to have Chop and they're not going to have Johnny, they're going to have a ton of playmakers all over the place that have proven themselves all year long. I think that Adisa and Danai are going to be up for the challenge. I think I have faith in them that they're going to get after the quarterback like they've been doing all season long. I feel good about the secondary, even with Johnny opting out, because we have Kalen coming, but then we also have a lot of young cornerbacks that have gotten some valuable playing time this season. And so I think, you know, while it's going to be a very stiff test, I think they're going to be doing just enough to put Penn State in a position to win. And on the offensive side of the football, I keep coming back to this well all pod long here in this episode, but I just really believe in kind of what they found in those final 2 weeks of the season after the firing of Mike Yurcich. I mean, I don't want to say it's a completely different offense, but it just kind of seems like it's a different mindset, like a different just emphasis on certain things, and the play calling just became, it just seemed like it calmed down. If there's like a good way for me to kind of sum it all up. So I like what kind of the groove that Drew got into. I understand that Ole Miss is, or that Michigan State is a far cry from what Ole Miss is as a team and as a threat and as a challenge for Penn State. But I just, you know, I love the fact that they got nearly all their playmakers going in that game. We finally saw Theo Johnson make his appearance in the 2023 season. So everybody's like feeling good. Seems like the vibes are good. I'm a vibes guy, so I'm going to ride that wave. So I'm saying I still believe I got Penn State winning 27-24.
I like it, and that's a good score. And, you know, I think we're both in agreement that this is going to be a close game. Like, neither of us are expecting a blowout either way. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to be a fun last game of the season, and we're in for a treat. A lot to play for on the line. I really hope that those guys are jacked up to be playing for a Peach Bowl. Because, like, you know, if you're playing in, like, the Fiesta Bowl or, like, you know, the Sugar Bowl, it's just like, okay, you know, we've won this before. You know, we're a Fiesta Bowl. We're playing Oregon. But, you know, this is the first time they've ever been to this one. And they got a chance to really set history and really be the only team to do this. I think that's the really cool thing about it, is with the college football playoff, this might never happen again. These games might be going to teams that aren't in the top 12. So I think Penn State has so much to play for. If I'm a player, I'm pretty excited to, you know, leave a legacy. Like, that's something you have to hold with you for the rest of your life. Like, you're going to be going to the bar and you're going to be getting asked questions like, okay, what's the only program in FBS history to win all six near six games? And if you can say Penn State, you know, at the end of the day, that's awesome. And they get to say, hey, I was a part of that team, you know, for the rest of their lives. Like, I know they fell short of expectations. It's very easy to feel defeated when you lose to Ohio State and Michigan, you know, year after year after year. But this is one of those games, kind of like the Rose Bowl last year, where this team really has a chance to right the ship and finish the season off on a good note.
Absolutely. And I think that's a sentiment that has been already shown by a lot of the players on the team, because even though there have been a couple of high profile opt-outs, there's been even more guys who have said, yes, I'm going to the NFL after this season, but I am going to play in this game. You know, you have a lot of guys out there like Theo, like Adisa, like Caden, like Curtis Jacobs. Like, the list, you know, it's pretty expansive at this point of guys who just want to go out there and lace up the shoes one last time. So I think that is a feeling that many on the team share, which is obviously great news for us, because we know that the players care. You know, like, just look at what's happening with the Orange Bowl with Georgia and Florida State. Like, Georgia's missing like almost a third of their team for that trip. Like, there's a bunch of players who didn't even make the trip for the game, including guys like Brock Bowers. So like that just tells you everything that you need to know about like what Georgia thinks of that game. And on the other side of the ball, I mean, Florida State is only going to have one scholarship quarterback playing in that game for them after the tragic Travis injury, and their other quarterback entered the transfer portal. So there are games out here where it just really seems like, you know, these teams have this like everything or nothing mentality. Like it's either championship or nothing. Like it's just a wasted season at that point. And I'm not going to like sit here and blame them for like having those feelings, because I mean, you know, Georgia is a team that I personally still think is one of the four best teams in college football. So, you know, for them, like the Orange Bowl probably does feel like a huge letdown, but for Penn State right now, it just kind of seems like the Peach Bowl is still a prized opportunity for them. And I love that as a fan.
Yeah, I think they should be excited about it, but I also think it really speaks out to the culture at Penn State. And you know, we're lucky we have a culture where, you know, people really seem to be bought into the program. You look at the transfer portal, all these guys transferring out of Georgia, the numbers are pretty staggering. And I think it's a good thing when your transfer portal numbers are low, and really, you know, the guys who are transferring out are guys who just aren't getting playing time and they're at the bottom of the depth chart. You understand that. So I think it's a testament to the program. And on Spice, I got to hear Spice speak. You know, one of the things he said was they were supposed to show up 15 minutes before their meetings. That was, Joe Paterno time.
Joe Pot time. Yeah.
Joe Pot time. Yep. So he told me one time that he showed up at 5:46. So he was only 14 minutes early. And you know, Joe went to him and said, "Hey, for you, it's 1 minute, but we got 120 guys in the room." And he was like, "So when you're 1 minute late and we're waiting for you, you just wasted 120 minutes, which is 2 hours." And he was like, "Oh," and then never happened again. So definitely kind of a cool little story. And you know, that discipline, when you instill that discipline, that can show up to little things that, you know, really show up on the football field. So that's kind of a special, you know, Penn State, you know, pride thing that we have going on, in discipline and doing things the right way. And you know, they talk about, you know, success with honor, and they try to do those things. And I feel like part of that is like, yeah, you're taking a risk by playing, but you know, you're honoring the university and your teammates and the guys who have played before you when you're going out and playing for something like Peach Bowl. So the fact that we do have a lot of numbers, you know, compared to a program like Georgia, I do think that is a, you know, a positive testament to the culture of the program at Penn State.
Well said. So I don't have anything else on this game. Got some transfer portal stuff, got some news from some other Penn State programs, but do you have anything else on Penn State's Peach Bowl against Ole Miss before we move on?
No, go State, we are.
All right, very good. So on the transfer portal side of things, I think that's a pretty good segue. So some news that came out for Penn State. On the unfortunate side of things, however, the offensive tackle recruit that Penn State had through the transfer portal has decided to leave the Nittany Lions in terms of his commitment to the program. I'm unsure of the program. Here, let me see if I can find it here. So, former Penn State transfer portal commit Alan Heron, guy who came out of Division II, was rated as a top 10 offensive tackle recruit in the transfer portal for the 2023-2024 cycle, has flipped his commitment to Maryland. So an unfortunate loss for Penn State, kind of a big get for Maryland, who's looking for some help on the offensive line. They were also in the running for Seton, the number one offensive tackle recruit, who decided to commit to Colorado. So Heron's going to be a big addition for them. And that leaves just one transfer portal commitment for Penn State right now, in the transfer kicker from Tulsa, Chase Myers.
Yeah. Penn State, as we talked about earlier, if you're not getting guys transferring out, that means your guys are staying and you don't have many roster spots. So I do think overall this is a, you know, still a good thing for Penn State. But yeah, when you do get the few guys that you want, you really want them. So mm-hmm. this is a big loss for Penn State, especially when it goes to a rival Maryland squad that you are still playing next year, despite the change in the conference realignment.
Yep, very true. So not exactly on the this has been confirmed side of things, but obviously since his entering the transfer portal, Julian Fleming has gotten a lot of attention from the Penn State faithful as a potential kind of second chance get for James Franklin and his crew. I mean, we've spoken about it probably almost a dozen times now already on the show, but Fleming, the number one wide receiver recruit in his class coming out of high school out of Southern Columbia, James Franklin and crew gunned for him hard. They wanted him in blue and white. He ultimately chose to go to Ohio State. He entered the transfer portal after this most recent season. And since then, the rumors have been swirling about the potential of Fleming coming back to Penn State for kind of like a swan song of sorts. So those rumors hit a fever pitch this in the past couple of days when Fleming shared a story. I believe it was on his Instagram, his new truck. He said in the caption in the post, the new toy with a smiley face. And on the back of that truck is a very interesting sticker and comes from a Blaze Alexander dealership, his new Ram truck coming from Blaze Alexander dealership. And what is most interesting about that, for all of you who aren't aware, is that Blaze Alexander Family Dealerships is a corporate partner of Penn State Athletics. So we're kind of, you know, grasping at straws here a little bit with some of this, I don't know what you want to call it, like speculative journalism, but the prospect of Fleming actually coming to Penn State it's exciting.
It is, and this would be a huge get, a position where Penn State's in dire need for help, and really, not only do you add to your team, you take away from another team, and just imagine, you know, where Ohio State is going. Like, they lose their starting quarterback to Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
You imagine that Marvin Harrison Jr. and Egbuka are both going to the draft, you would imagine. Trevion Henderson potentially could go to the draft as well. So their team could look very different on the offensive side of the ball next year. And then if Fleming comes here, that's obviously a huge guess. So they're losing all top three wide receiver targets. Stover, I'm not sure what your Stover is, but I imagine that if he can go to the NFL, he will. He's a stud. So that offense could look completely different next year. So yeah. My question for you, Andrew, we'll circle back then to the Blaze Alexander thing. But okay. Do you think Ohio State is in trouble?
No. They're Ohio State. It's like they're going to find a way. They're going to find their guy. Like they just signed the number one wide receiver recruit out of high school in this most recent class. Pretty sure they got the number one guy in the class before it. So yeah, like you're losing a ton of talent at wide receiver and at a couple of other key skill positions, but they've also got a stud in quarterback coming in the likes of Aaron Noland. There's been some speculation that Will Howard from K-State has some interest in Ohio State in addition to USC. So it's Ohio State is kind of what I keep going back to. They're going to find a way. They're going to get their talent. Like they're Ohio State, man. Like, sure, they're going to look different, but they're still going to be pretty dang good.
Now, this past season, you kind of saw Penn State close the gap. Do you think this closes the gap even more for the Nittany Lions?
I mean, I would say so, just because there's just going to be what seems to be more experience on the offensive side of the ball for Penn State as opposed to Ohio State, especially if some of those key guys decide to go to the NFL. Because you're going to have guys like Keandre, like Nick, like Katron, who are in year three, year four of their time with Penn State. I mean, Tyler Warren has been with the program now for a handful of years. He's probably going to be like the best tight end in the Big Ten next year. Drew is going to have a year under his belt as a full year starting quarterback. Like, so there's just going to be a lot of just experience that's shared with Penn State. And so I think what it's really going to come down to, like, you know, we've kind of pointed the finger to most of the season, is coaching and play calling. you know, because they just got to put them in a position to succeed and make use of the strengths of the offense and of the defense and stuff like that. And I think Manny Diaz kind of did a masterclass of that, just making use of all the defensive pieces that he had at his disposal and using heavy rotation pretty much everywhere on the field. So I think it just comes down to the coaching, the strategy, the scheme, and the play calling. So do I think that they could do it? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is, I don't want to say that they're closing the gap to Ohio State, because I do think there is potential for this roster to take a drop off just with, of all these guys we're losing to the NFL. You're losing Theo and Olu on the offensive side of the ball. You're losing probably all three of your starting corners and Daquan, Johnny Dixon, and Kalen King. Keaton Ellis as a graduating safety. So that secondary, which is kind of looked at as a strength of the defense, now you don't really know what you're getting in this upcoming year. So I do think that that could be something challenging. That's another portal position that I'm going to be looking at. And with Manny Diaz not running things back there, and that could be challenging. And, you know, Tom Allen, you know, he's experienced, but let's face it, Indiana's defenses have not been very good over the past year. Now, granted, they don't have the talent we do, but I do think, you know, next year things could be challenging on the defensive side of the ball in terms of talent.
Well, as long as Tom Allen just schemes up a couple of safety blitzes for KJ Winston Jr., I think we'll be just fine.
Yeah, but that's something interesting I wanted to talk about. Circling back to Blaze Alexander, that's actually where I got my car. I needed to trade in my 2005 Nissan Altima because it was just like, the engine was like making weird noises and the light was coming on half the time. So I looked at like the Kelley Blue Book value and like it was like $1,500. And I went to like some car dealership in like, yeah, Lewistown or something. And the guy offered me like $400 for a trade in. And I was like, you know, F out of here, man. And I was like getting ready to leave. And as I was in my car, he like knocked on my window and he was like, I'll offer you $800 for your car. I was like, you should have offered me that the first time. So I got out of there. I was like, see ya. So I actually go to Blaze Alexander and I would be happy to buy, you know, the current car I'm driving now. I was looking at, and I was like, I'd be happy with like $1,000. Cause I'm like, oh, they'll probably give me like the same offer. They'll probably try to like lowball me at like $500. But Blaze Alexander was just like, okay. And I was like, oh, guess I'm going to buy a car then.
Nice.
So that was kind of a funny story because I'm like, oh, like, you know, they're like, I always say never accept the first offer. But I was like, oh, crap. Like they gave it into my demands right away. So
I was this like, man, a wonderful impromptu ad read for Blaze Alexander dealerships.
It is. So Blaze Alexander, if you're listening, love to have you as a sponsor on the pod.
Specifically you, Blaze. We'd love to, not only would we love to have you as a sponsor, we'd love to have you on to talk about some Penn State sports.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so car I've gotten has been running pretty good. So I've enjoyed it. Got a nice Honda Accord Crosstour. So
well, let's hope that Julian's truck also runs pretty good.
Yeah, we need him getting a practice on time. I don't want him, you know, being late to team meetings. So we know in Penn State, according to Spice, that's something that's been very important for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. All right. So out the transfer portal, I don't really have anything else there. Do you?
No, not really. I called the quarterback for Coastal Carolina. I think he signed at NC State. So I think that's another interesting quarterback move. And there's still a lot of quarterbacks in the portal who have yet to decide where they go. It's really exciting. It's almost like NFL free agency, but you know, for that, they all seem to sign on the same day. So that's something that's a little bit different. But, you know, speaking of that, I do think Franklin and Pat Kraft made a really good point about tampering in the NCAA. Pat Kraft said he received a call from an agent about 8 different guys to see if Penn State would be interested in them and having them on the football team. And One of the guys was a player who was on the roster currently and did not have his name in the portal. That's absolutely wild to me. We've heard Franklin talk about how tampering is an issue and how they should actually enforce the rules. I think, you know, Michigan is one of those teams who's kind of been looked at for not following those rules. What are your thoughts on, you know, tampering for both, like, from what you've heard from Coach Franklin and Pat Kraft's recent comments about getting questions about a player that's already on his team?
Well, yeah, first of all, that's wild. So there definitely needs to be more kind of rules and regulations placed on transfer portal and kind of this free agency style thing that has emerged in this kind of corner of college football. Because, you know, I said it during the last pod, like I really don't have any issue with guys transferring to like find a better situation for them. You know, like a lot of the times they're just looking for like more playing time because that's their dream. They want to pursue it and they feel like they can, you know, make a life out of it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all well and good. But, you know, when you kind of open that can of worms, you're inevitably going to have a couple years of growing pains where guys are going to look to, I don't want to say cut corners, but kind of find the avenues where they're going to get into situations that they want to be in and try to leverage them as much as possible in the form of NIL. So now you have all these memes coming out where it's like, you know, this player is in conversation with another coach from a different team. And, you know, the coach is interested in having him going and the player is jokingly asking the coach like, yeah, so how much money are you going to give me? Like that sort of thing. But that's like reality now. And so I think there needs to be regulations and rules and oversight and, you know, just like kind of a, I don't want to call it like an enforcement like group, but, you know, just like a part of the organization to oversee this sort of thing, because they're like, I believe that, you know, there needs to be this in order to maintain like some level of parity among different college football programs. Because I mean, Jay Norvell from Colorado State made a really good point about this whole thing where he basically says, you know, I'm constantly fighting just to recruit my own guys back to my own team, because like a team like in a program like Colorado State is almost seen as like kind of like a farm program for a lot of these bigger programs, because like they have the juice, they have the money, they have the boosters to like kind of funnel money into these collectives. And then if any player shows promise out of a program like Colorado State, all they have to do is kind of show them the dollar signs, and more times than not, they're going to go. So I think that having some pieces in place to protect against tampering, kind of maintain some integrity in that sort of space, can maybe not necessarily help with like situations like that, because big programs are always going to be big programs. Like they're always going to have money, but there needs to be like some things in place so that programs like Colorado State just don't get completely blindsided. That's my two cents.
Yeah. Do you foresee the NCAA maybe doing something like a salary cap and whatever the profits are, splitting it up that way? So that way programs like, I don't know, like in Indiana have a shot to be good at football someday.
In some form, yes. Because like, let's look at like Texas A&M or any program in Texas for that matter. Like we watched Texas A&M say $70 million is not a big deal to us at all. Get this guy out of our football program. We don't care about the money. We want someone else. And they didn't bat an eye. $70 million is a big freaking deal to most organizations, whether they're involved in football or not. So there's always like, you know, there's programs around the country, especially in the South, especially in Texas, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, obviously like Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan have money, but there's programs out there that are always going to have deeper pockets. And so, you know, it's not necessarily going to be the case all the time that, you know, like Georgia is going to poach every player from like Colorado State or from some of these junior colleges and stuff like that. Because most of the time, if they're good enough, Georgia's just getting them out of high school no matter what. But I think there does need to be some limit set in place here, because it's just going to keep climbing and climbing and climbing. And these guys, you know, so like supposed value is just going to keep getting more and more inflated, because it's just going to become a bidding war. And I think we're already in it. And, you know, that was just kind of the natural kind of course of events with the foundation that they set in place, just basically saying, okay, you have these collectives, here are your players that are out there and stuff like that, and you can use them to like support them and their name, image, and likeness and stuff like that. But oh yeah, here's like a way that we can kind of frame this sort of thing to say that we're paying you to come here, even though we're not. We're using this to support you as a student athlete and stuff like that, which it's like, I'm fine. I'm not going to sit here and play morality cop, but that's just like what it is. So I'm, and I mean, you, and then you also have guys out of high school who are in conversations with NIL collectives. Cause I mean, I believe it was the number one wide receiver recruit that I mentioned before for Ohio State. He, I guess, had folks at Ohio State sweating a little bit because he didn't sign his letter of intent as early as he was expected to on signing day. And I guess his agent said that they had to square away a couple of things with the NIL collective before he signed. And some people brought up some interesting things and said, we thought that collectives weren't, you know, allowed to be like a part of recruiting and stuff like that. So there's just, it's the Wild West. Like that's all it is. The Wild West, man. And so every program, like, let me put it to you this way. If you're not doing some of the things that other programs are getting away with and nobody is slapping them on the wrist for it, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. It's kind of like one of those things. Like if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The NCAA has shown that they're not going to apply consequences to schools like Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama or Georgia, because they want to see them in the playoffs because that's good for TV ratings. It's a money thing. So until that happens, you know, it's going to keep on happening. So, you know, definitely some good talking points there. But speaking of money, Florida State has kind of made the first move to take a step out of the ACC due to their, you know, college football playoff snub, and to potentially looking to join the Big Ten, the SEC, or potentially the Big 12 if those two conferences do not accept them. So what are your thoughts on Florida State potentially making a move? And do you think it is the smart choice with the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. First thing I'll say is I'm sure that Clemson will give them a hearty farewell from the ACC because Clemson is then just going to run the conference forever, because it finally seems like Dabo Swinney is going to get out of his funk. Clemson is going to go back to being awesome and stuff like that. So that's number one. Number two, I think that it is kind of interesting, you know, because you're going to be playing a certain level of competition, especially now if you join the Big Ten. I mean, you're talking about playing Oregon and Washington, two teams that, I mean, you're one who's definitely going to be in the playoff, one that almost made the playoff, even though they had two losses. I mean, they were still in the conversation, at least. You have another team that made the playoff, Ohio State, who's always a threat. Like, you're playing these teams, and if you're as good of a program as you say that you are, and you go out there and you beat a handful of these teams and stuff like that, then all of a sudden the conversation or the talking point or the argument that you haven't played anybody kind of good enough to warrant your appearance in the college football playoff, that's essentially gone. So from that standpoint, it's like, I can see the value, but from a monetary standpoint as well, you know, I haven't really like dug into the numbers or anything like that, but there's a ton of money in the Big Ten, man. Like, there's a reason why all these programs and all these athletic departments wanted to join the Big Ten, is because there's a freaking huge amount of money in it. You know, with the Big Ten network and their revenue sharing and the amount of profits that they drive, like, it's hugely profitable for all these teams and all these programs to be in the Big Ten. And, you know, it's why, like, they did things like bring in Rutgers for the New York media market and stuff like that. Like, the Big Ten, as far as, you know, having the money from it being like a self-sustaining entity, has a lot of money. I mean, the SEC obviously just has a shit ton of money because it's the South and stuff like that. So, you know, from a revenue standpoint, like, I don't know if that's like a primary motivating factor for them. It is interesting, just given the timing, you know, how they got snubbed. They kind of were told that their strength of schedule wasn't good enough and stuff like that. So maybe this is just kind of them saying, like, all right, that was the last straw. If we're going to be playing these trash teams according to the playoff committee, like, we got to kind of up our game.
Yeah, I think it's a huge mistake, man. Like, you're going to a, I mean, if it was a four-team playoff, I think it would make more sense. But even with the way the conferences are moving now and the Pac-12 not having a team go to the college football playoff, you now have four conferences. So no conference will be left out. You're going to be looking at the SEC, and you know their champion's probably going to go, and that's it. And you're probably going to have the four conference champions. So I do think that it's a bad business move to lose $572 million. Now you might make that up over time just because of the TV deals. But if you're looking at getting your team to the college football playoff, like the SEC and the Big Ten, they are going to be loaded next year. Even the Big 12 getting some, you know, good quality schools. So I do think that, like, yeah, the four best teams in college football are going to be in the Big Ten and the SEC. But if you're looking at 12 teams, they're going to take at least one team from the Big 12 and at least one team from the ACC. So I do think it's a little bit crazy that they're bailing out, especially, you know, not letting this 12-team playoff situation play out to see, you know, if they can continue to win the ACC and then make their way to the college football playoff that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, it kind of, it's a dangerous game to play, because if you go to the Big Ten or the SEC, you know, you have the potential to lose like three or four games in either one of those conferences, depending on like how your schedule lands. So it's a dangerous game to play for sure. Like I said, I hadn't
like
really
Florida.
Yeah.
You see their schedule? It's insane. They play like Alabama, Georgia, and like Florida State like 3 weeks in a row or something. No, there's even crazy, like four teams. Like I think they also play like Ole Miss in that stretch, and like maybe like LSU as well. Like the five, all five of the best teams in, no, it might be even Texas is one of them.
Wow.
And they play like five of the best teams in the SEC in a row. Like it's, they got really unlucky. So it's just wild.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's interesting timing given, you know, the fact that there's still lingering anger and frustration about their playoff snub. So, I mean, I don't know. Have you seen any other updates about like them moving that forward? I saw that they had like a meeting with, what was it, like the Board of Regents at Florida State to kind of initiate that process. But has there been any other movement there?
Not that I know of, but I did see they were making the steps. I do think it's almost a little late and to kind of get it done.
Yeah.
But we were looking to add USC and UCLA, and then kind of Oregon and Washington kind of came out of the blue to join the Big Ten.
True.
And then everything kind of fell apart for the Pac-12. So, like, you never know when things are going to happen.
It's true.
Oh, didn't Oregon State and Washington, they didn't join the Mountain West, but they joined another conference for all sports except football. Do you remember what that conference was?
I don't remember. I just know that I saw that they...
Oh, it was the West Coast Conference. So the one with like Gonzaga and like St. Mary's in basketball.
Yeah.
It was that one.
And but then in football, while they're still kind of controlling the interests and the rights to the, you know, the Pacific Athletic Conference, mm-hmm. they have like a partnership with Mountain West teams to play football.
Okay. But yeah, I was kind of surprised to see them not be Mountain West in all of the sports and to join the WCC in basketball. But I guess that makes sense because you got like Gonzaga and St. Mary's there. So you do have a couple really good basketball schools to kind of compete against.
Yeah, they're not bad. That's for sure.
But yeah, I think that's kind of all the big news in college football playoff or, you know, college athletics in general. So did we miss anything?
No, I don't think so. It's been kind of a quiet couple of weeks. I mean, obviously with bowl season happening, you know, there's been plenty of football to watch and currently getting decimated in the bowl pool that I mentioned during the last
yeah,
episode.
Like I saw Northwestern beat Utah 14-7. Like I was not expecting that. Was not expecting that.
Yeah.
Any other like good games or upsets that you saw?
You know, there's been a few. I think I saw that, what was it, Air Force beat UCF. That was kind of an upset. Mm-hmm. So that one hurt. Let's see what other ones. I don't think I picked Minnesota to win. They just like set a record for like most number of consecutive bowl victories in FBS or something like that.
Got to watch out for them next year.
That's right. Oh yeah. So they beat Air Force beat JMU 31-21.
Yep. And then Georgia Tech beat UCF.
Yes. That was the one.
ACC power. That's baby. Right.
Yeah. over Big 12 UCF.
Did you see that SEC shorts with like the 12 angry men committee? And the one guy was like, they were like, oh, Florida State has their like second or third string quarterback, so they can't go. And then the guy was like, didn't Ohio State win a national championship with Cardale Jones?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I was like, that's a very valid point. Like, where was that guy?
Yeah. I mean, it just, what are you going to do? But yeah, so I got a couple of Penn State sports updates here that we can quickly run through before we wrap the pod up here. So a couple of things in your court, no pun intended, but got a couple updates from basketball. On the men's basketball side, they defeated Lemoyne 72-55 in their most recent game. Their next game is going to be against Rider on December 29th. And on the women's side, there was actually some cool news. Sophomore guard, I'm going to probably butcher the crap out of this name, Shay Shieshki, had 50 points and a program record 15 three-pointers in the team's rout of Central Connecticut State. So just put up huge, huge numbers.
Yeah, this women's team is like legit. I think they have a good chance to try to climb back up into the top 25. They do have Michigan State at home in the BJC at 4 o'clock after the Peach Bowl is going to be happening. So if you're in the Valley and want to check out the women's team, that'll be a big matchup for them and maybe get them back into that top 25. Yeah, pretty much when they're playing these no-name programs, like Penn State is dropping over 100 points on all these teams. So they're just absolutely dominating. The men's squad, they looked pretty good against Lemoyne. I was really happy with their performance and had some courtside seats. So I got to be on the floor pretty much, just behind the courtside, behind the basketball hoop, took a picture for the Instagram, and that was really cool to see. And actually Coach Gondak, the track coach, is sitting with me. So we had a good time talking about track and kind of our rivalry with Lock Haven. And he was like, were you part of that Lock Haven team that beat us? And I was like, no, I think I was like a junior in high school, but that was a selling point when they were trying to recruit me there that they beat Penn State that season. And I told him about that one time I almost beat Kaz Loxham, and I was mad at Curtis for not telling me, being like, hey, Kaz is there, go now. So it's not like a sprint at the end. And it was funny. So Isaiah Harris is like a world-class 800 meter runner who ran for Penn State as well. And there was actually a Lock Haven guy who beat him in a sprint at the end of a cross country meet. And like, I guess it was like all over like the track and field social media. So I can't believe I kind of missed out on that and never talked about that. But yeah, so some pretty cool, Lock Haven, Penn State, rivalries. And we talked about the indoor mile series that they do. That's really cool. And so definitely fun to talk with him as well. So good guy and a good program.
Sweet. Yeah. So I actually had an error in my reporting here. So for Shay's number against Central Connecticut State, so she had 40 points and she had 8 3-point field goals made on 14 attempts in that game. So just wanted to set the record straight.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, oh, she had a 50 burger. Like, yeah, I was like, that's a lot.
Right. No, I thought something was wrong when I said it at first. So I went back to check the numbers and yeah, I was wrong.
It's all right. As long as we fix our mistakes and we're accountable. So we do a good job of that here on the pod. And, I think that, in terms of accountability, I think, the football team has a good chance to really do that and kind of set the season straight here with one last battle against Ole Miss.
Sweet. I think that's a good place to wrap things up. You got anything else here, or do you want to call this a show?
Yeah, I think we can put a bow on this one. Andrew, how can fans help us out and keep the pod running?
Absolutely. So best way to help us out is by following us on all forms of social media at Nittany Blues or Nittany Blues Podcast. You can visit our website, nittanyblues.com. You can learn more about the show, learn more about myself and Vince, and learn how to support the show. Most importantly, it's like tips. They're never expected, but always appreciated. Help us do more cool things with the show if you've enjoyed it. You can also check out our merch at shop.nittanyblues.com. We've got all kinds of cool stuff. We guarantee you're not going to find it anywhere else. And just a nice way to kind of fill out your Penn State wardrobe with some unique items. So I would say those are the biggest things. But Vince, what else you got?
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. As always, we love you. Enjoy the Peach Bowl. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.